New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 322 on the podcast today, Big Gib. Oh, yeah. Now, if you don't know Big Gib, if you're not on Twitter, he is worth following. He's a guy that's done phenomenally well in his ISA account in 2013, November. Less than 2 years ago, he had $3,500. I'm not going to tell you how much he has now, but he's done well. he's done well in a short period of time. And that's why he carries a lot of influence on Twitter and in investor circles. So I've got him on. Excellent stuff. Also, I'm talking to Chris, CEO of DDD Group. And the ticker code is DDD. Now listen, have a listen to this interview because it's very worthwhile. It's a very good point of interest halfway through. Regardless of their properties, assets they have, and their products, which are very good, they sell, they're gaining traction, especially in the gaming market in America. They have a litigation case going on with LG Electronics. And there's a very interesting bit of detail in that interview. Listen to it, because I've put them now on my watch list. Because put it this way, this legal case is transformational. All right. I've also got the penny stock of the day with potential. Penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. Click the link here at sharepickers.com if you know of a penny stock that you think has potential. And listen, sometimes you'll be sitting in there. If you're a good researcher, you'll be sitting on a penny stock that's doing nothing. It hasn't got any volume. All you're waiting for is something to happen. Now, if you want to bring that penny stock, you know, a bit of exposure to the wider audience, then let me know via the link here at sharepickers.com and I'll tell other people and it'll get a bit of exposure there. And like yesterday, Audio Boom. Do you know what? Phenomenal. Check what happened out yesterday and look at the chart of Audio Boom. I'm not saying this podcast moves markets, but when the right news is delivered, it does. You know, phenomenal. Look at the volume on Audio Boom yesterday. Up until before the interview, then when I said I liked Audio Boom so much, I bought stock in the company, which I have, it literally took off. It started going up and up. The share price when I started recording the podcast with Rob Proctor was down by 6%, the share price on Audio Boom. By the end of the day, it finished up by 13.8%. Up on a decent bit of volume as well. So listen, if you know a penny stock with potential, or if you want to get a CEO on this podcast that you think needs a bit of exposure to the company because they're good and they're going places, just click the link, sharepickers.com, and suggest one. In fact, there's a little link as well where you can suggest a company and I'll get in contact with them and I'll do a little interview. I also have the featured riser of the day, and this podcast is dedicated to Ryan L23, who gave me a 5-star rating and cracking review on iTunes. I will read that out in a bit. Ryan, muchos apreciados, yeah? Joining me on the podcast now is someone who's very, very popular on Twitter for a reason, because he's done very well in stocks and shares. Thanks very much, Big Gib, for coming on.
Good afternoon, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Now, if people aren't following you and they're into investing, they should follow you because you're always spinning out some interesting investment ideas there. But first of all, Big Gib, let's go back. 10 years. What were you doing? Because I know how well you've done, but we're going to say that in a bit. But go back 10 years. What were you doing 10 years ago?
10 years, 2005, I was... Well, I'll go back a bit further now. I joined the army in... I left school at 16, went to college for... Well, I think I only lasted about 6 months in college. And then joined the army just before I was 17 years old. I ended up doing 12 years in the army. Left the army after doing 12 years with a little bit of cash. Well, for doing 12 years, the army kind of gives you £10,000 to play with.
Yeah, so that's all you had, is 10 grand, is it?
10 grand, and, well, if you're in the army that long, you're sort of in a little cocoon, you know what I mean? You're like away from the big wide world of civilian street, so...
Yeah, I'm not saying 10 grand is not a lot. All I'm saying is for that amount of time in the army, it's not a lot, is it, really?
No,
considering you're into the big bad world there and you've got to find a trade, you know?
Yeah, it's not a lot at all, really, but... It gets you out there, gets you a little bit of money behind you if you can find a job straight away. I know a lot of people struggle to leave the army after that length of period of time. But yeah, I left the army, got a job doing, well, a contract job doing testing digital communications, done pretty well in that, got promoted up to like an area manager. Then I moved on to somehow blagged my way into software testing.
Yeah.
And became a pretty good software testing down in Redden. And then after that, I ended up at Jaguar Land Rover testing safety components.
So when did you start doing stocks and shares? How did you get the bug? Because I know it is a bit of a bug. Once people get in, they get in. But how did you start doing it? Were you doing it in the army or when did it start?
No, it was after I'd left the army. I put my first money into the market in 2009.
Right.
It was actually the mother-in-law that suggested to buy Lloyd Bank shares of all shares. Of course, they were going through the Halifax Bank of Scotland takeover sort of thing, and she suggested putting a little bit of money into Lloyd's.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up putting £1,000 in. Then Lloyd's went through all their rights issues, and obviously, I didn't know much about the markets, but I started averaging myself down because the rights issues was at a lot less price. So I ended up with about £5,000 or £6,000 into Lloyd's Bank.
Yeah.
And that was my first investment. Then a friend of mine said how well he'd done. It was back in the Rockhopper days and the Falkland Oil days when all share prices were doing pretty well in the oil sector. And he told me that he'd five or six bagged on Rockhopper. And I was like, well, why haven't you told me?
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, mate. Thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, so he told me that, and I said, right, what else is going on? Because I'd never heard of... I didn't even know these penny stocks existed. So he says, right, there's another drill going on with the Falkland Oil and Gas. So I've checked it out, and everyone on the chat board, like, screaming it's going to go to £10. So I thought, right, I'll whip everything out of Lloyd's Bank. So I took 10 grand out of Lloyd's Bank, and I stuck everything into Falkland Oil and Gas because I thought, guaranteed winner, make a bit of money.
Yeah.
So I stuck the full 10,000 into Falkland Oil and Gas.
I love that. Just completely listening to the bulletin board people and think, yes, you know.
Yeah, totally stupid, not having a clue what the hell I'm doing in the penny stock world. So I fired the 10,000 into Falkland Oil and Gas at £2.40.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the time. It was 4:09 on the Friday afternoon. So obviously the weekend goes by, 7 o'clock Monday morning, dust at R&S, share price straight down to 95 pence.
Oh!
Stupid Big Gib loses £6,000. And I had to phone my boss that day. I phoned my boss, told him I was sick, took the day off work, had a 15-minute cry into my pillow, and then decided, right, I need to start researching these companies on the penny stock world and trying to get my money back.
Do you know, I love the fact that you actually called in sick and thought, I couldn't go to work.
I couldn't go to work after losing that much money. I've never lost that much money in my life.
Yeah, because you will. I bet you did feel sick, didn't you?
Oh, I was devastated.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to scroll forward a little bit now, and we can go back and forward. First of all, you know, it doesn't seem a good start. So I know this figure. So you started in November 2013 with 3.5 grand in your ISA account, yeah?
Yeah, I haven't done too bad over the years up until that point.
Yeah.
So I've bought like a couple of properties along the way, not like full on paid out outright cash, but like paid a deposit, moved into a bigger home.
Yeah.
So I've always done okay, but never really made the move I've made now in the market, which obviously started in November 2013.
Yeah.
Because I think it had been about £12,000 I had. And I spoke to a very good friend of mine, Bill, and I said to him, I said, look, I've had enough of this market. I said, I'm thinking of getting out. And he suggested, he said, look, don't get out fully. Leave something in your account just in case we spot a big mover. Mm-hmm. So I took the cash out and I left myself with £3,500. And then obviously set to work on a new strategy going forward.
So what is that? What changed then? Well, I mean, was it because you thought, okay, listen, I'm not going to take it, you know. It's almost like when you step back and relax a bit, it's almost like putting less into an investment, isn't it? If you put a lot in and you're urging it to work, sometimes it doesn't work. But if you step back a bit sometimes and relax and put less in, it helps, doesn't it?
It does help. But the reason why I was going to quit the market, because I was always chasing a stock. Like if it was going up, I was chasing it, then it would come back down.
Yeah.
You'd get, I don't know, if a share price moves 10, 20% up, and you buy into it, you're going to get the traders who are in for 10 or 20% selling.
Yeah.
So then when you see the share price coming back the other way, I'd be the one selling again. So I'm buying high and then selling low, which you see on the market all day long.
Yeah, and that's the opposite of what we should be doing. And isn't it odd? One of the biggest cliches around is buy low, sell high. But it's hard to do when you first start out. It's really hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is unless you install discipline into, I don't know, 90% of every single trade you do. Because sometimes it's fun to go a bit crazy. Like, I done a trade the other day in PTV. That's not a normal trade of mine. But I looked at the valuation of the company, chucked a few quid into it, hoping that it would just, because I've seen PTV, it just spikes on nothing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, trades like that, there's no discipline in crazy trades like that.
So let's say, in that, so from that time, when you said to Bell had enough, and he said he convinced you to keep £3,500 in, up until, not even two years yet, 2 years in November it'll be. How well have you done, from £3,500 to what?
Well, I was filling out some paperwork the other day, actually, and it was asking me to work out my, net value, and I accumulated all the accounts together, because I've got a number of different accounts. So I put it all together, worked out my net value, and from that £3,500, it's now over 800,000.
Do you know what's amazing? Is that that's a lot of money. Of course it is. Obviously, you know, the richest man in the world, but that in 2 years is a phenomenal return on your money, isn't it?
It's crazy, really. Like some days, I do actually have to pinch myself and like check the accounts again, because I don't know. It's the old cliche of like, things like that don't happen to people like me, you know what I mean? It is mind-blowing sometimes when you think of where I've come from with a 3.5 to what I am now.
Yeah.
It's off the chart, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you know, where are you originally from then, Vig?
I'm originally from Hartlepool, up in the northeast.
Yeah. I doubt whether, you know, where you're from, because you mentioned before you're from you know, the working class part of Hartlepool. I doubt there are many people now with your ISA account size. You know, doesn't happen, does it?
Possibly not, no, because, I know there's a few people across Twitter who are from Hartlepool, and there's not much there now, really, in Hartlepool. And we've all, when I was younger, we lived on, like, well, I didn't realise at the time, but they were quite rough council estates.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember when we moved from a two-bed, we were in a two-bedroom council house, and it was, like, me, my brother, and my sister in the same bedroom. And we managed to get another council house, which is only about 600 metres down the road. But I remember moving stuff from one house to the next house in a wheelbarrow. Mm-hmm. At, like, 12 years old, walking down the road with a wheelbarrow full of all my clothes.
Yeah.
Because that's... Well, that was the norm then. You were allowed to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, do you know what? I want to know now how you got from 3.5 grand to 800 grand in less than 2 years. Was there lots of trades? Were there a couple of big trades that happened? How did you do it? And you know, and what would you, if you had to give someone a couple of tips, what would you say?
Well, there's a few big trades in there, but when I lost a lot of profit in US oil and gas, and the US oil and gas share price came plummeting down, that left me with a little bit of cash. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, I got a call from Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
And Doc Holliday gave me loads of grief about US oil and gas and whatnot. But one thing he did say, which I didn't realise when he said it, because he started talking about market mechanics as he does, going down that route. But one thing he mentioned that it didn't stick in my head that day, but the day I decided to quit the markets and Bell says, leave a bit of cash in, the conversation with Doc Holliday popped back into my head. He said something which has always stuck with me. He said, buy wholesale and not retail.
Yeah, and I didn't know this, because you mentioned this to me that we had a chat the other night beforehand, and I didn't know what this meant. I thought, what do you mean? Do you mean get in like, you know, institutional investors on the placings, less price? And you said, no. So explain.
No, basically, what it is, he said, institutions, they always buy at wholesale prices. You never see an institution buying high. They'll always go for the best deals they can get hold of, in my opinion. So, I don't know, if you look at a chart and you see the share price up 5%, and you see that the chart's risen 20% in the last 2 weeks, the chances are you're not buying at the wholesale price. The wholesale price was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So you just sit and you will just wait for that price to come down.
Yeah.
And then when the price gets to that, what you think's wholesale price, doesn't always work. But if you see that wholesale price, then you look for your entry. But it's also got to have, it's got to have the fundamentals, and you've also got to catch it before them fundamentals kick in. You've got to catch it before the fundamentals and the momentum kicks in.
Yeah. Because when that happens, I mean, it really powers away, doesn't it? I mean, you know, sometimes, I mean, Paul Johnson from Metal Tiger, he does very well personally trading, you know, and he has done, and he said the same thing. He said, you've got to get in there when there's no interest, and you've got to sit.
Yeah.
You've got to sit and wait.
I've spoken to Paul before. Yeah, he's had a lot of success over the years, hasn't he? He's really good, Paul.
And he said basically, you've got to sit and wait. You've got to get in, as long as you know about the company, do the research, get in there, sit and wait when there's no interest, and sit and wait. And then when the momentum comes and a bit of interest happens, that's when you see stratospheric rises, because no one's even looking at it, you know? And so how do you find those? I mean, you know, I know you do quite a lot of research, you know, I see you put stuff up on Twitter, but how do you find those stocks? I mean, do you use filters, screeners? What do you do?
I'll just occasionally just look through the market, and I'll write stocks down with certain, I don't know, estimated dates, I think, is the time to look at things, and I'll keep on looking in that diary. But, well, there's a lot of companies, like, especially when I was down in that 3,500, the strategy that I took on was a bit, well, I wouldn't say it was a crazy one, because it was obviously the right one, but my strategy with 3,500 was to find a stock at the bottom and research it and work out the news flow that was coming over the next, I don't know, like 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And if you're seeing had news flow and it was at the wholesale price, then I would just go all in. So it's only three and a half thousand. So £3,500 all in. It should have news flow.
Yeah,
momentum starts building up. The fundamentals start kicking in. And when the fundamentals start kicking in, that's when you see the sentiment in that stock start increasing. So you've got like momentum, you've got your momentum at the top end, you've got the fundamentals starting to creep into the share price, old long-term shareholders starting to get a little bit excited, and a share price moving.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you see that, when you see the sentiment start to change and the momentum start to stop, that's when, well, that's where I decide, right, this is the time to get out.
Yeah, so how long do you, exactly, so that's it. Buying is quite hard, but I think selling is even more hard sometimes, isn't it? So especially in penny stocks, because you're not talking about, you know, the big blue chips that can just gradually grind away for years on end, up higher and higher. They can go up and come back down, penny stocks, to lower when they started. So how do you know when to take a profit, or, you know, I mean, is it different categories of companies you look at, stocks you look at? I mean, do some long-term hold, some are trades, what?
It's got to be based on actual research.
Mm.
Like, I don't know, like AFPO, a more recent one. I know a lot of people sold out of AFPO really early.
Yeah.
And they missed out on a lot of gains. But I remember when the RNS came out, I said, there's no point in selling this until the end of September. Because Chris Cleverly, he was clearly a man on a mission.
Yeah.
And, well, by the end of September, it was up near three pence, wasn't it? So.
Yeah, well, do you know, I had an email yesterday by someone who held AFPO, and that was one of the first of my, you know, penny stock challenges, and I doubled my money and got out way too early, really, but I doubled my money, and it went back to three pence, and someone still held them, but they sold something out. But an email yesterday, it's come off a lot. What's happening?
Is it going to go back? Yeah, it's come off a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and it's now down at 1.9 pence, and you can see a huge arch there over the three pence coming down to 1.9 pence. And it's like, with that, do you hold any AFPO anymore?
Yeah, I've still got 220,000. Not many. I had millions. I've only got 220,000. But I've took profit all the way along. Which really, I didn't even stick to what I said. Hold until the end of September. I just took profit on the way up.
Yeah, that's it.
So when really I should have just held everything until the end of September.
So you look at what fundamentals and technicals? Do you look at charts as well as fundamentals?
I know a little bit about charts, but I don't go into detail on them like someone like Andy Blaustein, who's very good with his chart.
Yeah.
I just try and stick to good old hardcore fashioned research.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And if the research, because there's a lot of stocks out there, and I'm sure there's many other good investors out there that do a lot of research behind the scenes. And it's not just a tweet and say, right, buy this. Like with a lot of shares that I researched, some of the research has gone on for like 3, 4, 5 weeks before I even take a position. And back in the early days of having, I don't know, between 3,500 and 30,000 pounds, when I ten bagged my portfolio, some nights I was up to like 2, 3 in the morning researching companies and then trying to get to sleep with all that research in the head and the dreaming of, right, this is going to bag up from 30,000 to 60,000 pounds. And I'm on to the next level, then it gets hard. But when that research pays off and your research shows you you're right, then yeah, it's a good feeling when you start pushing on to them bigger levels in your portfolio.
Yeah. So what, from early days, not even 2 years ago, what was the first big hit you had? And you know, I thought, wow.
The first one where it all worked. Like the strategy where I thought, because I looked through all my past trades in the past and realised it took me like about a week to work out the reason why I was losing money.
Mm.
And like I was just chasing stocks.
Yeah.
But when I put the strategy in place, it was Electo Minerals.
Okay.
And that I bought in around, must have been around about a penny, I think, or just above a penny.
Mm.
And that shot off to I think I ended up selling around 2.3, 2.4.
Nice.
And that was from an all-in position of like 3,500.
Yeah.
So to see 130% increase in the portfolio from reducing myself to 3,500, then, well, the strategy, I thought then, right, it's working now.
Yeah.
This could work. If I can find another one that's going to move the same based on getting in at the bottom, waiting for the fundamentals and momentum to kick in, and then the sentiment goes sky high with investors thinking it's going to, I don't know, 10 bag, then that's when you make your money in it. And once all the momentum starts running out, that's the time to cut. Not when it, see, I don't believe in selling for like 10, 20% profits and taking profits. I'll take profits when that I think that momentum's running out.
Yeah.
And it's got when it's got no more to go, like the fundamentals have all run out.
Yeah. Okay, marvellous. Do you know what? I'm looking now at the major shareholders in CEB, Seb Resources. I know you're a big fan of Seb, and you're chatting to Dave Whitby, who's been on the podcast. You're chatting to him there on the thing. And so how many stocks do you have? I mean, you obviously go quite big and have very few stocks. How many stocks do you have?
At the moment, I've got, let's have a look, 1, 2, 3, 4. I've got 10 at the moment.
Okay.
That's normally, it's not normally that big. Normally I try and keep it around 5 or 6.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, again, that's discipline, isn't it? Because I jump on stocks all the time, fear of missing out, you know, and think, oh, that's the next big one, and I jump on it. And,
yeah, fear of missing out, I call that the FOMO.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the worst thing you can have, that FOMO.
I know. But anyway, I'm looking at the major shareholders in SEB. There's Adrian Woodburn above you, Wayne Gibson is second, Trafalgar Catalyst. So you hold 29 million shares.
Yeah, see, I'm not happy with that. Just because that shareholder register, that's based off the last TR1 that they know about.
Yeah.
So they don't know if you've increased your shareholding since then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure whether Adrian's above 33, but I'm definitely on 34.5 million now.
All right.
Yes, exactly. So get down there, Adrian. Get down there, boy.
Yeah. So when do you start buying? When do you start buying on SEB? Because at the moment, let's look at the price. They are at where are they buy? You know this off by heart, probably, but just over one penny, 1.01 looks like. So when do you start buying that?
It was around about, must have been around about 0.2p.
Okay.
It was when they released.
Wow.
An RNS to say that they were raising £100,000.
Yeah.
And on that RNS, it stated, where is it at? I've got it in front of me somewhere. It mentions something about oil and gas. Now, even from when I first started investing, I used to see the major shareholders in different AIM companies. I've always wanted to have a large proportion, or even just 3% of an AIM listed company going into oil and gas.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, I'll take 3% because it was valued very cheap at the time. So I took me 3%, I went over 4%, went over 5%, got a little bit carried away. And then obviously the share price started more, and I think it went up to like half a penny. And then they had to suspend the stock because the share price was getting very, very overheated. So they suspended the stock, and then obviously Dave Whitby came in, which to have 5% of a company with Dave Whitby involved, it was like, wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's Mr. Whitby coming here for?
Yeah, have you heard of him before?
No, I never heard him before, but I looked at his CV and obviously he's a very impressive guy, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. You must have been loving that when that was announced. Because I remember Alan Green came on the podcast and he was chatting about CEB, but he was talking about another stock first and he mentioned CEB. Oh, by the way, Seb Resources there. And that was at 0.2, just before suspension. And I paid no attention to it. And all of a sudden it shot up, like I say, 0.5 before suspension. And I said to him, Alan, that stock you talked about on Friday, it went mad. And he said, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And so I did get into it a bit later, but I still hold a bit there. But I really like Dave. He's got a vision there. He knows what he's doing, doesn't he? But anyway, so Dave, you chatted to today because you're a major shareholder now. You're in the big boys club. So can you reveal anything you said?
Yeah, I had a little chat with Dave Whitby. He likes to keep in touch with me every now and again just to see how I'm doing in the markets, what the general feel in the market is. Obviously, we discussed the new appointments today. Mm-hmm. And well, we were talking about Gregor, and I was asking him how on earth has he got Gregor involved in CB. And it turns out that Gregor and Dave have known each other since 1990. So
yeah,
there's a big friendship with him there, I think. And Dave Whippy's very excited to have Gregor on the team. Gregor's CV, well, it stacks up against anyone with the projects that he's been involved with in the past. Dealing with projects producing 200,000 barrels of oil a day. Mm-hmm. Why would a guy with a CV like that get involved with a company valued less than 7 million quid?
Yeah.
You've only got to put that little number two and two together to work out these boys in Indonesia, they are not there to mess about.
Yeah.
They are there to do a good job and provide maximum value to shareholders going forward. It's a very exciting. I'm more confident now than I was at 0.2.
Are you? Yeah, because I mentioned on that weekend podcast I had a bit of money and I did put a little bit out because I bought it, I think 0.67 it was, way above you. But then a chunk for me in there, quite a big chunk, and it went up, you know, to almost double that. And I thought, I'll take a little bit off here. And I've sat now, I'm still sitting there, and I'm going to keep topping up. because Dave's been on, I believe what he's going to do, but I think he's going to, in my head, I thought, this is, you know, everyone's buying into Dave's story completely, and there may be, you know, like I said, people are banning about how many assets are on coming in, but I think if the RNS comes in now, revealing the assets, will it live up to the hype? That's what I'm worried about, and I thought, you know the old thing, you know, buy on rumour, sell on fact, and do you think that's going to happen a bit or not?
I don't see why it would do if, well, you'd have some traders, obviously, running for the door, which doesn't make any sense at all. But what they need to realise is that these assets can be picked up for, well, pennies, really, in the oil industry. And you can get these assets very cheap. Mm. And straight away from day one, if these assets are producing, well, four figures, over 1,000 barrels of oil a day, and he takes a large slice on a farming of around 40 to 50%, then 40 to 50% of 1,000 barrels of oil a day, then that profit is coming straight into Seb Resources from day one. Yeah. So they're getting profit straight away. As soon as that deal is signed, then that's income and revenue for Seb, mm-hmm. yeah. straight away. So if he gets one, he's going to get two. If he gets two, then he's going to get three. He ain't going to stop, is he?
No, you know, I had the intention that when he came on, he was talking about that. He said, basically, we keep plugging away. We'll get the next one and the next one and the next one. And he said, well, we keep plugging at it. And, yeah, it does. Like he's not going to stop. He's going to keep going. As long as he can keep getting another one, he'll get another one. And so it'll be, I think it'll completely, you know, like I said, it's a growth business. I think he's going to grow it. And that's yeah, his full intention, you know.
Yeah, he's obviously screened over 70 fields over in Indonesia, and he's whittled it down to 9 that they're very interested in.
Yeah.
Now, his screening process, whatever he's got for his screening process, he told me a while back that he's not getting out of bed for 100 barrels of oil a day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So you know, each asset he's screened, we've got to be talking 1,000 barrels of oil a day plus yeah. on the field with potential to maximise and optimise each and every field 50 to 100%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, saying on the podcast, you know, so what are you talking about? He said, oh, net, you know, 500, between 500 and 2,000, he said, you know. So, yeah, so it looks good there. I just think, it's a bit, you know, sometimes when you think, wow, everyone's loving the Seb story. And there's no reason why you shouldn't. He's a guy, knows what he's doing now. And when he sent an email a while back, I remember, and he said, and at the time I didn't understand what he meant. He said, it's nice to be the hunter rather than the hunted, you know. and I know what he means by that now. It means loads of distressed assets and small little private businesses out there who can't afford to keep their oil fields going. And so he can go in there and basically, you know, offer him a nice little deal, but literally get a cracking bargain on it, you know? And
that's what he's going for. He's not there to steal the assets from these private owners. He's there to go in and actually help them.
Mm, yeah.
So he won't just... Because he can go in there and probably buy these assets off these owners, but that doesn't help that owner get out of his full-on debt situation that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So if he comes in, offers them a little bit of cash to pay off their short-term, their short-term debt to make them a little bit more comfortable for the next few months. So that could be done for, $100,000, $200,000. And then in come the Seb team, the full team works on it, starts getting, just little things, like little bits of equipment that cost £40,000. He was telling me that these private owners can't afford bits of equipment that cost $40,000, which would help production on the well. They can't afford that because they're so far in debt that they can't even afford these little bits of equipment. Now, Dave can see all the errors and faults on these fields, him and his team.
Yeah.
And it won't take much money to get the productions to start getting increased on them fields. So he's in a perfect position. And well, everything's going better than expected for Dave and his team. And obviously now he's got these new additions. It looks like the dream team just got even better.
Yeah. And do you know what? As far as shares are concerned, it doesn't pull back very often. But when it does, you should jump in, I think. Not you, obviously, you've got enough. But I mean, if anyone's intending again, like I said, you've got to be quick on the pullbacks, haven't you? Because it doesn't last very long, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, like even it's been bashed a few times, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, do you know, the last few trading days before today, it did have a bit of weakness, and that's the first time I've seen it have a bit of weakness like that. But now it's up again on the news, so you think, wow. So if you're waiting for a bigger fall, you're not going to get a huge fall on this, I don't think. But anyway, well, listen, you've got to come on again and chat some more. But I think, is there anything else you want to talk about went.
No, I didn't realise how long we've been chatting for, Justin.
Well, it's good, though. It's all good stuff. But listen, so give us one tip for a new trainer, Big Gib there. One tip that you'd give someone new into the game. What would you say?
What, apart from CB?
Yeah. not particularly a tip for a company, a tip for, just general strategy. Like, what helped you? What did you learn at the start that you think you still hold with you now that's invaluable? Is it that buy and wholesale?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely, you've got to do research. You can't just pile in on whatever someone says on a bulletin board or Twitter, which I'm seeing a lot of lately. Mm. Like there's stocks that are flying. Now when I just sit there and I don't even touch it.
Yeah.
Because I've missed out on the first 30% and I'm saying, oh, you need to buy this. But it's gone. That price where you could have gone in the bottom, it's gone. So I'm disciplined enough now to leave these things because, yeah, I could do another 100% or it could come straight back down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm disciplined enough now to just to stick to my rules. And if a share price goes outside them rules, then I won't touch it.
Yeah.
But stocks I'm really excited about is that IOG.
Yeah.
I know you picked a few IOG up.
Yeah. That annoyed me. I know, but really odd how that. Because I didn't read all the bits on our last RNS. Because it's funny, on Twitter, you see stocks that are hot and they start banning around. And sometimes there's plenty of time to get in. You can, a couple of days before they actually take off. But you have to do quite a bit of research. So I did a bit of research and they started moving. I thought, I don't want to jump in and follow this. And then it came back a bit, and I thought, I'll put a limit order. Yeah, and it was it. And then it went up again, about 5.25, and I had a limit order of 4.5p, and I didn't want to lose it, so I put up to 5, and I got filled, and literally then it came back. But then it shot up at 60%, didn't it, yesterday? So I thought, oh, okay, don't feel too bad now. But
yeah, it moved well yesterday, and I think, even now, I think it would be a wise move to get in now, because if that...
Yeah, because that wasn't spiked, is it? I think a little bit. You can wait for that a little bit to come back a bit. Because, like you said, it's funding, isn't it, issues?
Yeah, and if the funding... Yeah, obviously, there's a risk there that the funding doesn't come in. And then it could affect the share price. But I think the drill's too big for to not get funded. Mm. So I think once it does get funded, it's very low risk. They're targeting 26 million barrels, and there's a deeper target of 11 million barrels. So it's got all the similarities, apart from the funding issue, of XEL of old.
Yeah.
On the Bentley oil field.
Mm-hmm.
And we know how well that went up. Well, I think I nearly 10 bag, didn't it?
Yeah, so have you sort of become a bit of an expert on oil now, because you've been doing it for like several years?
No, I'm not an expert. I know what I need to know.
Yeah.
I don't go into the technical side of the oil and gas world. I've got Dave Whitby anyway. Any questions I've got on oil and gas, Dave Whitby's happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Cool.
he loves the game.
Yeah, so you like Seb, you like IOG, anything else worth looking at that hasn't taken off?
I'd say H&L as well, because H&L's only valued at £3 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one that seems to be bouncing, that just seems to be bouncing up and down all the time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Looking today, a strong day today, really. 14%. Yeah, it seems to be, was that support level? I bought some there, and I put some more at 10p, I think it was, the support level. I thought, because it's almost like it's too obvious, but technical analysis sometimes helps with round figures. And you look at H&L, you think, there's a little, it just bounced over 10p. I may not come back there again. But there we are. Lovely, the Big Gib on Twitter. Listen, come on again and chat some more, all right?
Yes, will do, yeah.
Cheers, fella. Speak soon.
Yep, thanks for having me on, Justin. Thank you.
Oh, hang on, before you go, you mentioned something about CEB, and Dave said he wants to have a little kind of competition thing. What's it all about, fella?
Yes, Dave would like to put it out to private investors to think up and present to them a new company name, because obviously CEB, they're going to totally rebrand the company.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get Fest assets on board, which I don't think is far away, but he wants private investors to put in suggestions. Maybe you can put them into yourself and you can pass them on to Dave, but suggestions for a new company name. He's got a few ideas, but they're not... he hasn't got a company name as such that everyone can agree on.
Yeah.
So the competition would be, think of a company name, and the winner will get something like a meal for two at a fancy London restaurant.
Nice. All right. How about something like Gib versus Lemonade?
Yeah, we could do, couldn't we? Yeah. I like fizzy lemonade.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, marvellous. And how do they submit that? Just to you, to what? What do they do?
Yeah, if they want to send it across to me or you, or even if they've got Dave Whitby's email address, then
yeah.
Pass them across and I'll...
I'll set up a little form on SurveyMonkey and people can click there and I'll just put the suggestion in. What I'll say, what's your suggestion for Seb's new name? And I'll put it up there and then I'll fling them all over to Dave there.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Yeah, I like that because, you know, someone who's invested in the company will ultimately, hopefully, you know, have it named after their idea, which is a nice bit of, you know, it's more of an ownership than just owning shares, I think, you know.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And I've suggested a certain name to him, and he says, look, I think that's a bit too rampant for a company.
Keep it clean. Yeah. All right, fella.
No, it was clean. He just thought it was a bit of a rampy name.
What was it then?
It was Momentous Oil and Gas.
Okay, yeah, I know what you mean. Yes, it's right. Why not? Yeah, I know what you mean. He has to live up to being momentous, which is could be tricky in tricky environments. And
thought that might be a little bit over the top.
Yeah, cool. All right, that's nice. We'll set that up. And listen, fella, speak to you soon.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Thanks very much.
Okay, the featured riser of the day is Bell Zone Mining. BZM. I don't know what, I heard someone else call this by a different name recently, and that stuck in my head. It's quite crude, actually. Anyway, they're up by over 150% today. Let's have a look where they are. If I just click on here. News, 166% if I'm looking at it now. And it's because... Yeah, 166%. And it's because, essentially, they've done an update, a project update on their maiden nickel resource. You can check that out here at sharepickers.com. But that's rather than 150% rise. Nice. Just looking at my stocks today. What is the winner today? Let's have a look. It is Nyota Minerals, NYO, up 11%. Very quiet stock below that. Hague of London. Atlas Developments up by 9%. Trying to get those on the phone. And there may be a possibility it'll happen next week, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Okay, it's time for today's penny stock with potential. Suggested by Mike Waters. Thank you, Mike. Name and ticker symbol, UJO. That's Union Jack Oil, of course. What does the company do? Oil Field Explorer, and now producer early next year. What do you say this is a short, medium, long-term investment? Medium to long-term. How many shares does the company have in issue? 2.4 billion, I think it is. 2.4 billion shares in issue. And what's the current price and market cap? It is 0.22 pence, 5.3 million market cap. Three reasons why you think this company has potential: cash in bank, producing next year, and made recent acquisitions. So that's cash in bank, number one, producing next year, number two. Number three, made recent acquisitions, as suggested by Mike. Thank you, Mike. If you know a penny stock with potential, please click the link here at sharepickers.com and suggest away. Check out UJO. I know Doc Holliday was a big fan of them a while back. I'm not quite sure if he's still in them, but do your own research on that. UJO is the ticker. Joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of DDD Group, ticker code DDD, is Chris Udall. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Justin. Nice to be here.
Yes, well, nice to have you there. So, you know, technology is amazing. You're in the tech space because you're in Los Angeles. I'm here just outside Southampton. not a showbiz. But it's nice to hook up there. And so are you based in America?
Yes, I am. Yes, I've been based in the US with DDD since I came over in 1998. And our offices, as you point out, are right in the heart of an area of Los Angeles that's now known as Silicon Beach, where all of the big technology companies like Yahoo and Google and others are setting up camp and capturing the Hollywood content community and using it to drive these new entertainment technology experiences that we're all getting on our smartphones and tablets these days.
Silicon Beach. Oh, it sounds a nightmare. It sounds like, I don't know how you can live there. You should move to Southampton. So, Chris, I mean, you know, there are lots of people listening to the podcast. Some people would have heard of you, other people won't. So take us through what you actually do, giving any points of interest you think we need to know. Anything at all, really? Go for it.
Well, DDD Group has been around for 20-plus years. I think we're celebrating our 23rd year this year. And we specialize in intelligent video technologies. Essentially, what we do is we analyze video and pictures, and we're able to pick out information about what's going on in that picture or video, predominantly depth information. And then using that depth information, we can allow you to do things with the video that you might not otherwise be able to do. So, for instance, one of the markets where I think we've employed that technology very successfully has been in the 3D market, particularly consumer products like televisions and personal computers, where 55 million products, I think, have now shipped with our technology in it by large companies like Samsung and Sony and others.
How many did you say then?
55 million and counting. So we license the technologies to those companies. Our technologies in the 3D market take a normal television show and turn it into 3D in real time as you're watching it using a button on your remote control of your 3D television. And that has been shipped worldwide. And we get a royalty every quarter from the licensees that we've got. And that generates a business that has a gross profit margin today of about 99.8%. So we're predominantly a technology development company in the intelligent video space, image analysis technologies. We've got a series of patents behind that, and we create products that we then license to large companies, and they pay us royalties every quarter.
Okay, and so what? How many products do you create?
Well, we've taken those technologies and we've packaged them up as firmware. And firmware is basically software that companies who are making silicon chips can then add into their silicon chip design. And that's what companies like Samsung do in the television market. We also packaged it up as Windows software. So if you happen to have a PC with a 3D display or a virtual reality headset, you can download that software from our trydef.com website, try it out. And if you like it, you can buy it. And then for more of the recent products that we've created, we also have Android versions of those applications that you can download from the Google Play Store on the same principle. If you like it, after a trial period, you can buy it. So we distribute these products in different packages according to the device that the customer's using. In our latest technologies that we've recently released, those are available from our trydev.com website today, and those are orientated towards the video conferencing and what's called the game casting markets.
Yeah, and you were saying you actually, you know, came up with an amazing stat about TriDef, your website. Just recall that stat again.
That's right. Well, TriDef.com, I think the last time I looked, it was certainly somewhere in the 400,000s as you know, one of the more popular websites on the face of the planet. So we do get a decent amount of traffic there, and that's obviously increasing because of the size of the new markets like video conferencing and game casting that we're addressing, and those markets are significantly larger than the niche market of 3D where the company has historically been operating.
Yeah, so I get this right. Do you have customers, retail customers, as well as big companies?
Yes, we do. I mean, if you look at the way that the company evolved over 2010 to 2013, it was very much what we call an OEM licensing business, where we licensed our technologies and solutions directly to the companies that were making the PCs or the televisions or the smartphones. We've started to move away from that because there's a very, very thin margin available in that space today. The manufacturers of laptops and smartphones are trying to get them in your hands as a consumer so cheaply that they're constantly coming back to companies like ourselves and asking for lower prices, whereas if we're able, as we are today, to go directly to those consumers through things like the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, the consumer's quite happily paying several dollars for something which we would have to sell to an OEM under a license for tens of cents. So our profit margins are much better when we go direct to consumer, and the infrastructure exists for that today in a way that it didn't a few years ago when we were working in the 3D market.
Okay, and so off the top of your head, how are revenues? I mean, how's the revenue stream going?
Well, the results that we reported a few weeks ago at the beginning of September showed that we'd seen a decline in the royalties that we get from the 3D market. And that's predominantly because companies like Samsung, who are our primary customer in that space, are moving their 3D feature from where it has been in high-def televisions to the new ultra-high-def televisions, which you've probably seen in the stores. It's the product that everybody wants us to buy for Christmas, which gives us four times the resolution on our TV. Mm-hmm. And as part of that transition, companies like Samsung are making today a smaller number of ultra-high-def TVs. It's still overall a fairly small percentage of the market, but we expect those revenues to come back. In the 2D market, we really only launched these products for game casting and video conferencing towards the end of May this year. So we didn't have that much of a window to sort of report revenues that were meaningful from the first half of this year. But certainly we've been very encouraged. I think our sales of the new TriDef SmartCam product doubled from August to September. So we're very, very pleased with that. And obviously, we're very focused on bringing on additional distribution partners in addition to the affiliates that we've got, like Split Media Lab, so that we can address larger and larger market segments.
Marvellous. Okay, well, I've got a couple of points of interest here that I'll throw it to you and tell me about them. So the SmartCam collaboration progress with Split Media Labs, what's all that about?
Well, what SmartCam allows you to do is, using your webcam in your computer or your tablet or smartphone, it will look at you, and as you're talking to whoever it is you're talking to on a video call, or in Split Media's case, recording a video of yourself playing a video game, it'll do real-time background replacement. So in a very similar way to watching the weather tonight on BBC or ITV, you'll see somebody standing in front of a weather map. They're actually standing in front of a green screen or a blue screen, and that weather map has been transposed behind them. What our smart cam does is it allows you to do that with your video camera, but without any special green screen or other special technology. So it just uses the webcam and our special analysis software to do that. Split Media Labs is one of the key providers of video encoding solutions that are used in a big market on this side of the Atlantic, which is called game casting. There's an internet website called Twitch, where over a million game players a month go and watch videos of 100 million a month go and watch videos of other people playing games, World of Warcraft, etc.
Yeah.
And what our software allows Split Media's customers to do is to use their webcam while they're playing a game on World of Warcraft. They can then commentate about how they're going through a particular level of the game or how they're playing through this level, and their picture of themselves appears overlaid in real time on the bottom left or bottom right of the screen as they coach people through. And that's a very, very popular feature. Twitch is actually the fourth largest source of internet video in the US now.
Wow.
Behind YouTube and Netflix and Hulu. So it's a very, very strong growth market for us.
And where does the revenue come from that? So you license that to them, or what happens to that?
Well, what we've done with Split Media is we've done two separate approaches, and this is very much going back to what we were talking about earlier. The first agreement that we put together was an affiliate agreement. Split Media has several hundred thousand customers of their XSplit software application, and they've gone out and promoted this new feature to their customers. Their customers can then come to TriDef.com, download the application, try it out for 7 days, and if they like it, they can buy it. They buy it directly from DDD for, I think it's $9.99, and then we share that revenue with Split Media Labs. So Split Media Labs is incentivized to help us sell this feature to their customers financially. And from their point of view, it's a way of generating additional revenue from all the hard work that they've invested building up that user base to begin with. The separate deal that we've done with Split Media Labs is obviously because of the growth in popularity of game casting, and specifically the XSplit software that they make. They've now got PC manufacturers coming to them, like MSI, MicroStar International, who make very, very high performance gaming computers. And MSI is saying, look, we want to put Split Media Labs XSplit software on our PCs. Split Media Labs wants to include the SmartCam feature with that. And we then pre-install that on, I think, hundreds of thousands of PCs, although we're expecting that to grow to, I think, 1 to 2 million PCs by 2016. And then when a customer buys that software, activates their Split Media Labs license, we get a royalty payment from Split Media on that point. So it's slightly different to the OEM licensing model because obviously we think that the PC makers themselves are loathed to give up what is a very thin profit margin to applications these days.
Yeah, okay. Now, Alan, Alan comes on the podcast quite regularly. A while back, talked about you guys, and he did mention one of the points of interest was your infringement suit with LG Electronics, the patent infringement. Talk us through that, Chris.
Well, I have to be careful, given that it's a pending litigation, but I'll certainly be able to recap what we've explained to our shareholders. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned, DDD many years ago, as we went through the process of developing these 2D to 3D conversion technologies, created a very mature intellectual property patent library that's granted in various countries around the world. And we've obviously built our products and services on the foundation of those patents. Over the course of the last couple of years, we've become aware of some other companies' products and services in the consumer market and in the market where services to convert film and video to 3D are performed by other companies, that our patent claims may be being used without a license. And in the case of LG, we obviously had some discussions with them that are reflected in the lawsuit that we filed that date back to 2009, where we walked them through at their request the way that we perform the conversion. And obviously the lawsuit alleges that in the course of delivering their 3D conversion solution for their televisions, LG has apparently used some of the claims of our patents without a license. And obviously, like many other companies that are interested in protecting their position that we've worked very hard to build up with 50 plus million products in the market with lots of licensees, including LG themselves for their personal computers and smartphones, we felt that it was an appropriate path to take to try and resolve this.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I mean, Alan did mention the law firm that's representing you. They've got a quite high success rate, haven't they?
Well, Quinn Emanuel is one of the foremost patent litigation law firms in the United States, and I think has established roots in other major markets like Europe. Here in the US, and again, I think this reflected in the press release that we put out when we initiated this in July, they've, I think, been involved in somewhere around about 1,500 intellectual property lawsuits for very big companies. They've worked for Samsung and Sony and Motorola. A lot of the mobile phone wars have been worked on by this firm. And I think their success rate in the cases that they've tried or mediated has been somewhere in the region of 90%+. And that's generated about $15 billion worth of settlements for the companies that they've represented. So we certainly were very pleased to have got a company of that caliber to take this project on, because I think it's evidence of their comfort of the strength of our patent claims.
Yeah, and obviously you can't say a lot about the case, like you said, because it's ongoing. But do you have any kind of time frame as to when this will be, come to a solution will be arrived at?
Well, the timetable is really set by the courts here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there was the first hearing on Monday last week where the timetable or the first elements of the timetable were set by the judge who's overseeing the case. So over the course of the next 3 or 4 months up until the spring of next year, we will, I think, lay out the specifics of the infringement that we believe is going on. And obviously we would expect LG will have their own comments and opinions about what we lay out. And then we would imagine that the first major milestone in these projects is what's called a Markman hearing, where the claims that have been asserted are agreed upon by the court. And I think that will happen probably in the spring of 2016.
Okay, so essentially you make a claim. Is that the case? A monetary amount, is that right? And then you have to decide if it goes your way. I mean, is that what happens? Or is it who decides the amount of money?
Well, the complaint that we filed in the court alleges the infringement by LG's televisions in the US. The Markman hearing gets into the very specifics of the individual claims in the patents that are being challenged as being infringed by the products. At this stage, there's no monetary amount stipulated in that complaint that we filed. That all comes out as part of the process of discussion between LG and DDD in front of the court. But I think, interestingly, given the discussions that we'd had with LG that dated back to 2009, which included disclosures about the patents that we believe have been infringed here, it does put LG in the position potentially of what's called willful infringement. So that does create the opportunity where the damages that could be secured are tripled from what they would ordinarily be. So obviously we're going to be watching this very closely because we feel that there's some significant value in this. And separate to what we're doing with LG, we also have a partnership with a company in Dallas called Dominion Harbor. And Dominion Harbor has been approaching some companies who are in the conversion services market. And we're very encouraged by the discussions that are going on in that segment. And as we indicated in our interim results announcement, we do think that one of those could actually come to a conclusion without the need to litigate prior to the end of this year.
Okay. And what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, I think... we've certainly indicated, I think, publicly, and I did this in a recent interview earlier this year, that, we've generated $25 million so far from our intellectual property library just from licensing it to these various companies in the 3D market. And I think our view is that there's at least that amount again sitting out there in resolving this unlicensed use of our patents. So it's a reasonably meaningful amount of money.
Well, that's 25 million is transformational for a company. What are you, market cap of 3 million, is it?
Obviously, I think not much of this is factored into the valuation of the company. I mean, I think people tend to concentrate on the slowdown that we've seen in the 3D marketplace. Obviously, as we continue to deliver further results in the new 2D markets, which are measured in user bases of billions of users, not millions of users, I think we would hope to see that being reflected in the share price. Although, having said that, we just completed a placement of nearly £500,000 at the beginning of September, and we had good, strong support for that.
Yeah, I see that. And what's, you've £500,000 at the placement there, raised some money. So what was that for, that money?
Well, there's two or three things that we're doing. In addition to the PC software that we've just rolled out for video conferencing products like Skype and Ubu and Facebook Chat and the game casting market with companies like Split Media Labs, we're also very close to delivering an Android version of our SmartCam software. And we have a very, very interesting app that we're excited to get in front of people by the time we get to November. The app allows you to take a picture using your tablet or your smartphone. So imagine that you want to take a selfie in front of the Houses of Parliament. One of the biggest challenges with taking a selfie today is that you're holding the phone out at arm's length and you're not quite sure whether your nose is going to be obscuring the clock face of Big Ben. It's a bit of a pain in the neck. Well, what you can do now with our new Android app is you can take a picture of Big Ben with the camera that points away from you, and then you can take your picture using the camera that faces you. Our software gets rid of all the background, whatever's running around behind you, and then you can overlay yourself on top of that picture of Big Ben. You can squeeze and pinch and move yourself around to get yourself in the optimal position, and then you can share that with your friends. The really interesting thing is that if your friends have our app, they can take your picture off your Facebook page or as you've shared it with them over the mobile network, and they can use that same capability. They can take their own picture, get rid of their background, and put themselves back into your picture and share it back to you. So we've made this sort of interactive selfie app, and given that there's tens of millions of photos a day shared every day on social media, we're pretty interested to see how this new app will be received, because nobody has done this yet at this level of simplicity where you just point, click, and then squeeze and move yourself around. So part of the funding was to complete the delivery of that product. And then the remaining funding, we think that there's going to be some additional staff that we add to the development team as a result of these new products. And then there's a little bit of ammunition there as well to speed up what we're doing in the patent litigation side of things, where we've got some expenses coming up just because the case is starting to gain momentum.
Yeah, so essentially, I could take a picture of me. You could take a picture of yourself there, and we could check Mark Zuckerberg in the middle, and we could all be on Silicon Beach. Is that right?
That's exactly right. We call this next generation of selfie a groupie, can actually. We think it's the next iteration of the selfie, the ability to interactively put yourself into other people's photos. You can be there with Lewis Hamilton on the podium in Sochi last weekend, or you can be with your friends hanging out on Silicon Beach.
Cool. I like the sound of that. Cool. Well, Chris, I mean, I think we've got a lot of points there. You know, there's a lot of things going on there. So just a wrap-up kind of thing, if you can give three sort of bullet points for investors or potential investors, three reasons why you think someone should, you know, think about researching your company and maybe investing.
Well, I think there's really three things that we've got that will appeal to the investment community. One, with the new products that we're describing, like Smart Cam and the new Android app, pursuing very, very large markets. The video conferencing market is measured in billions of users. The game casting market has 1.5 million players a month contributing videos to platforms like Twitch, and there's tens of millions of people taking photographs on billions of mobile phones with cameras in them. So, you know, we're transforming the business from one that looked at a niche market in 3D with millions of customers to one that has billions of devices. And there's no limitation on us getting on those devices. So we don't need a special display or a special camera. We work with what's already in the device. I think the management team has proven that it can go and do business and build a profitable business. We did a lot of work very successfully with large companies like Samsung and Sony and Lenovo and Intel in the 3D market. So we know how to roll these technologies out to get them into millions of hands very quickly. And I think the other thing that we've got from a purely product standpoint is we've got something that's unique. Nobody has done this sort of thing that we're doing yet, particularly as we transition into things like the social photography app that we talked about a few minutes ago. And, you know, sitting underneath those products is a good patent library, which we feel is strong enough to go and assert our rights if we feel that people are trying to do it without a license. So I think we've got some fairly useful attributes that make us a good investment proposition. And with the market cap the way we are today, a sort of market cap of £3 or 4 million, given the way that we feel that we can drive this business, we think that that's a good opportunity.
Marvellous. Chris, it's very interesting to talk to you. Like I said, you've got a lot of exciting opportunities, but that litigation is very interesting and worth just keeping an eye on just for that, isn't it, really? Even, you know, you've got a huge suite of products there that are very interesting, but that is, I'll keep an eye on it. I'll put your shares now on a watch list, because looking at the chart, I mean, I'm a bit of a geek with charts, and I've been looking at it, and it looks like it's been bottoming out a bit at the prices at the moment. So, a very interesting technical position, and also, you know, fundamental position, really. So it's nice to chat to you, Chris, and listen, come on again when you have any more news updates that we can share with potential investors.
Well, we'll look forward to creating the first groupie for you on Silicon Beach. So
marvellous. Speak soon, Chris.
Great. Thank you, Justin.
That's it for the podcast. Apart from to say, this podcast is dedicated to Ryan L. 23, who gave me this cracking review on iTunes, including a 5-star rating. I'm only 6 away from 100, which is in the big boys league. There aren't many with those reviews. So please, if you can give me a little review, click the link here at sharepickers.com. If you get any value from this podcast, if you do, please click the link, give me a review. Best podcast on iTunes. Do you know what? I really appreciate that. And obviously it's not far, it's not the best podcast, but it's nice if you to say so. You know, I really do appreciate that. So Ryan says, I found this podcast when it was up to about episode 50, and I've caught up and listened to every one since. I like Justin because he's not a multi-billionaire. Yes, I am. Don't I come across like one? Only kidding. How many multi-billionaires do podcasts? not many. Anyway, talking about investing tens of thousands in one go like some hedge fund manager. He's a normal guy. Sorry, he's not a multi-billion pounder. Talking about investing thousands in one go. Yes, you're right. He's a normal guy. Normal. And Sorry, you know, I'm just being stupid. He's a normal guy with a normal job and is kind bloke you want to go to beer with. He's learning along the way like the rest of us. He gives great advice and information on how the show and brilliant guests from charting experts to CEOs of different companies. I particularly like the very knowledgeable insights from Alan Green and the odd visit from Clem. I listened to this. I got Clem back on, actually, but he's at the moment, I don't think he's allowed to talk about what he's doing. It's not illegal. It's just, he's in a sort of corporate sort of takeover thing, isn't he? So with Sefton, so he wouldn't be able to talk about that. I listen to the show whenever I can, and even though the podcast comes out daily, it isn't enough. No hesitation on giving this 5 stars. I could give it more than that if I could. Keep up the good work. Cheers. Ryan, thank you very much, fella. I do really appreciate that. You've gone into the effort there of clicking through, writing a load of lies, nice lies about me, and I appreciate that. And give me a 5-star review rating. So thank you very much. That's it for the podcast. Please do your own research on any company mentioned. It's not your money, obviously. Sorry, it is your money. It's not your money. It's mine. Every bit of money you have is mine. So it's your money. It's your money. You know what I'm saying. Nothing on this podcast constitutes investment advice. Please do your own research, as it's your own money. Thank you for listening. Help me out here by giving me a review or suggesting a penny stock, or maybe you want me to interview a CEO. Then click the link at cheerpickers.com.
The ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.